Something for the weekend. It's a podcast from me, Mike Bennett. Hello, listeners, and welcome to this Something for the Weekend on Sunday, the 8th of May, 2016. Now, it's, what is it here? It's 6:45, so it's a bit late for a podcast that's supposed to go out on a weekend, but it's been a very busy weekend for me, you see, so I haven't really had an opportunity to do much, because, as I mentioned a few weeks ago in the podcast that I put out last time, I was at the Wexworlds Festival in Wexford, Ireland, and it ran for 2 days, started yesterday, and was on again today, and I went along on both days and, you know, mingled and got involved, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. I did my reading on Saturday, and I put out a question on the sect Facebook group, and I asked, what should I read? I'm going to read from Underwood and Flinch, but I'm not sure what bit to read. So what's your favourite bit? And the answer came back. There were lots of answers, lots of ideas and suggestions, but the one that kept coming back again and again and again and again was, do Night Crossing. Because obviously it's the beginning. So I thought, all right, well, far be it from me to argue. So that's the one I did. I did it in two halves. Kind of when I started, there's a bit of an intro, you know, hello, my name is, because nobody knew who I was there. There was quite a big room, and, you know, obviously none of you guys came. It's a long way for everybody, and nobody around here in Wexford seems to have the vaguest clue who I am. So, yeah, there were 15 or so people there. Big room, 15 people. So it was quite nice. And, yeah, so I did it, and I started out with a little hello, who I am. And then I read the first part of the story, and then in the middle bit, I kind of talked about podcasting and what I do and what my books are and how I publish them, etc. And then after that little break, I went into the second half, and that was it. And yeah, it went really well. I hopefully managed to convince a few people that it was worth downloading my stuff and listening. I don't know, but fingers crossed, eh? It was a good experience and I enjoyed it very much. Was I any good? Well, that's something you can decide for yourself, because I made a recording of the reading and I'm going to share it with you today. Now, I haven't listened back to it, because if I listen to it, I know that I will edit it. I won't be able to put it out with my mistakes on it, and there are mistakes on there. So I thought, no, put it out as it was, put it out warts and all. There's a couple of points. It was actually, there's a habit that I got into when I was teaching English as a foreign language. Imagine you've got a book in your hands and you're reading to a class full of students and they're reading the same book as you. And as you read it to them, when you make a mistake, maybe you misread a word, you see one word and it's actually a different word or something like that, I would kind of say, oh, no, and then I would correct myself. So he walked into the room and opened a bag. No, sorry, I walked into the room and opened a book. That's the way I would do it. I would just correct myself, so the students would know I had made a mistake. And you know, you don't pronounce bag as book. But this is such an ingrained habit with me that when I was reading aloud, even though the people in the audience can speak English and aren't, you know, following what I'm saying in a book, every time I made a mistake, I gave them the corrected version. You know, out of habit, which was something I mustn't do again. But anyway, here it is. Just to give you a sample of what I do, this is my principal work, Underwood and Flinch. I have a copy here, and I'd like to read to you from it. Is anybody interested in hearing a bit of a story?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Good. All right. Well, what I'll do is I'll read the first part now, and then we'll take a break, and I'll talk about what I do and how you can do it too, and then I'll read the rest of it. So let's begin. This is the very beginning of the book. Initially, it was a short story called Night Crossing, and it became absorbed as part of the prologue of the story. So, Night Crossing. On a chill night in the late spring of 1958, the cargo ship Glenmalloch sounded its foghorn as it had done every 10 minutes for the last 12 hours and edged slowly onward through mist towards Spain. The ship had left the Algerian port of Oran the previous morning, carrying a cargo of fresh fruit, dates and tobacco. It also carried 7 passengers, the majority of whom were in their cabins getting ready for dinner. However, 2 passengers stood alone in the stern, at the stern, pardon me,
The men were dressed in formal black suits. The taller man appeared to be in his late 30s, while the shorter, who also wore a black overcoat, looked about 10 years older. There was an attitude of stoical regret about both men, as if misfortune had recently come to visit and was now reluctant to leave.
"I'm so sorry, Lord Underwood," said the shorter man as he extended his hands to take the body of the cat.
Underwood handed him the corpse and sighed. "Never mind, Finch. I know you did all you could. Let's just forget about it, shall we?"
"I know you're not fond of..."
"Really, Finch, forget it." Underwood drew his watch from his waistcoat and flipped it open. The second hand wasn't moving, and he tapped gently at the scratched face. The hand began to move. He smiled. "What time do you have, Finch?" Finch dropped the cat over the side of the ship and checked his wristwatch.
"It's just after 8:30, sir."
Underwood adjusted his watch.
"Here's Pat. Hello, Pat."
Underwood adjusted his watch. Underwood adjusted his watch. There it is. Wound it and put it back in his pocket. "And what's the current speed? Any idea?"
5 knots, sir."
5 knots? Underwood looked over the side and down at the sea. The ship's slow, churning wake confirmed Flinch's report.
"It's the fog, sir. A necessary precaution, I'm afraid."
Underwood ran a finger along the handrail and looked up at the single red and black funnel as the foghorn again sounded its low, two-note warning.
"I see. So what does that make our estimated time of arrival?" "We should reach Balagoon about 2 hours, sir."
"Oh, damn. I'd hoped we'd be there by now."
"Yes, sir. It is regrettable."
"Oh, well, never mind, eh?" Underwood began to reach for his cigarette case when he noticed the blood on his hand.
"Oh, dear. Do you have a hanky or something, Finch?"
Flinch pulled a white handkerchief from the breast pocket of his jacket and passed it to his master without a word.
"Thank you."
Underwood wiped the blood from his hands and then inspected the soiled handkerchief.
"Sorry, Flinch."
He handed it back. "I'll get you a replacement when we reach port."
"Very kind, sir," said Flinch,
folding the handkerchief in such a way as to conceal the blood stains before popping it back into his pocket. Underwood reached into the side pocket of his jacket and took out his silver cigarette case.
"Fag?" "Oh, don't mind if I do, sir."
Flinch accepted one of the Prophet's cigarettes and took out his lighter. He extended the flame to Underwood, who leaned forward to meet it. For a moment, the flame illuminated a pale, handsome face, though one with an impression of being somewhat undernourished. The cheeks were sunken beneath high, sharp cheekbones. His hair was dark, parted from the left, and fashionably slick with brill cream that shone in the light from Flinch's flame. His cigarette lit, Underwood stepped back. Flinch lit his own cigarette and slipped the lighter back into his pocket.
"Everything go all right with the car?" Underwood asked. "I didn't really notice earlier on." "Everything's fine, sir. It's latched securely to the cargo hatch. Not that there's much chance of it rolling around the deck in this weather."
"No, indeed. What about the other things? How's the move going?"
"Oh, all very well, sir. Most of it is, as you know, coming by sea in the next few months. Until then, we'll have to make do with what's already in the house."
"You mean you'll have to make do? Such things are hardly my concern."
"No, sir.
There was a note of regret in Flinch's voice as he looked down at his shoes. He noticed a spot of blood on his left toe cap, and he took out the already stained handkerchief and bent to wipe it off. He gave the shoe a brief, cursory polish before rising again with an air of complete composure.
"Oh, don't worry, Arthur," said Underwood, smiling. "It's got everything you could possibly need. You've been in touch with Senor Hernandez?" "Yes, sir. His handwriting is a little cryptic, or perhaps it's just his turn of phrase, but he reports everything is ready and awaiting your arrival. Other members of the sect are making themselves very useful in the area." Besides, Fernandez, in Ronda, we have Senor Largo, a notary at Albacete itself, and a retired couple who are going to be helping out around the house and estate. Good share. Underwood took a drag on his cigarette. Then his eyes narrowed. As Oak flinched his shoulder, he noticed a figure in the shadows further down the deck. I say, have you noticed anything queer about any of the other passengers? Flinch frowned. No, sir. No one asking any questions? No. Might I ask why, sir? Underwood watched as the figure, perhaps sensing he had been seen, receded into the mist. Don't look now, Arthur, but I think we're being watched.
Watched, sir?
Yes, chap about 20 yards behind you wearing a bowler hat. Flinch nodded slowly.
I think I know the fellow, sir. I caught his eye once or twice this afternoon.
No contact, though?
No, sir. Not a sausage.
I see. Is he still there? Sorry, wrong person.
Is he still there, sir?
No, he's gone. Flinch turned to look, but there was nothing other than the mist. He reached into his pocket, and a second later, the blade of his flick knife snapped open.
Shall I ask to see his ticket, my lord? Perhaps punch it?
That won't be necessary, Flinch. They'll be serving dinner soon, and I'm sure you'd rather murder a nice steak, steamed pudding. Sorry, steamed steak pudding.
I'm not overly hungry, sir. I ate a most satisfying luncheon.
Did you indeed? Well, I'm famished. So, why don't you toddle off and get yourself ready for dinner?
Okay. But what about the snooper, sir?
Underwood smiled. Don't concern yourself with him. I think I might seek him out myself. Perhaps he'd like to join me for dinner. Flinch nodded and closed the blade of his knife.
Right you are, did, sir.
He bowed slightly before turning and walking off in the direction of his cabin. Underwood watched him go and then rubbed his hands briskly together. The mist was chill and damp, and he wished he'd had Flinch bring him along a warm coat. Still, he'd soon warm up. He slipped his hands into his trouser pockets and struck out in the direction in which he'd seen their observer skulk off a few minutes earlier. His search was brief. As he turned the corner, he almost ran straight into him. The man started, and Underwood held up his hands in apology.
I do beg your pardon. I was just out for a vigorous stroll around the deck. I didn't expect anyone else to be about. It's such a dismal evening.
The man in the bowler hat laughed nervously.
No harm done.
He made as if to continue, but Underwood laid a hand on his arm.
I say, pardon me, but have we met somewhere before?
The man frowned.
I don't think so.
You're English, aren't you?
Well, yes, but...
Underwood smiled.
I know. England's not exactly a goldfish bowl, is it? But I was just thinking, perhaps we met in Algeria, you know, expats, small communities.
I'm sorry, I'm not an expat.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'm afraid you're mistaken. Good evening. The man again attempted to walk away.
So, are you here on business or pleasure?
The man stopped and turned back.
If you must know, I'm travelling on business.
Ah, I thought as much. Underwood chuckled.
I do hope you don't mind me being so forward, but as soon as I saw the bowler hat, I thought, there's a fellow Englishman.
Really? Well, congratulations.
Thank you. May I ask what business you're in?
Carpets.
Carpets? Oh, how interesting.
Not really.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm late for dinner.
The man turned and walked on.
I mean, Underwood persisted, walking after him, it's interesting, because I thought you may be something else, a detective, perhaps.
The man stopped. He answered without turning.
Oh?
Yes, I wondered if perhaps you might be following my companion and I.
The man turned and looked back. He frowned.
Whatever gave you that idea?
Oh, I don't know, just the way you were watching us earlier on. I thought perhaps you might be a sleuth of some sort, perhaps from Scotland Yard.
The man smiled uncertainly. You have a vivid imagination, sir.
Yes, I do.
Underwood strolled up to the man and extended his hand. My name's Underwood. The man looked at the hand for a moment before taking it.
Jenkins. Aaron Jenkins.
Of the yard?
No, nothing so grand, Mr. Underwood.
It's Lord Underwood, actually.
Sorry, I should have mentioned that earlier. Keep forgetting. You've no idea who I am.
Jenkins raised his eyebrows.
Oh, a lord, eh? I didn't notice a lord on the passenger manifest.
Really, Mr. Jenkins? What were you looking at the passenger manifest for?
I always like to know who I'm travelling with. It pays to know.
Oh, yes. Always on the lookout for a potential carpet sale, eh?
Underwood took out his cigarettes and opened the case to Jenkins.
Fag?
Thank you.
Jenkins took one and reached into his coat pocket for a box of matches.
So, as I was saying, your lordship, it's strange you not being on the passenger manifest. I'd have thought you'd have been at the top of the list, being a member of the aristocracy and all.
He struck a match and cupped it for Underwood.
I like to keep a low profile when I'm travelling, Mr. Jenkins.
Underwood lit his cigarette. I asked for my name to be kept off the list, and the shipping company obliged. The captain and the crew are well aware of my being here, though.
I see. So, no red carpet treatment for you when you came aboard, then?
No.
But they must have given you some kind of welcome, surely?
Of course.
They did? Oh, it's just that I didn't see you come aboard, sir. I saw your friend, all right, the undertaker chap, and I watched as they winched that hearse of yours aboard. But I didn't see you anywhere. Should have been that hearse of his, big bun.
Jenkins chuckled.
So you were watching us then, Mr. Jenkins.
Jenkins chuckled.
Well, a hearse swinging in a net isn't exactly everyday cargo, your lordship. A number of us were watching it, not just me.
Yes, I suppose it is a little unusual.
Jenkins nodded.
For a few moments, the two men stood silently smoking, regarding each other like chess players with cool aplomb. Then, Jenkins dropped his cigarette and ground it out underfoot.
Well, I think I'd better be getting along, your lordship. I don't want to be late for dinner.
Nice to meet you, and thanks for the cigarette.
Jenkins touched the brim of his hat and turned.
Yes, nice to meet you too, Mr. Jenkins.
Underwood watched the other man for a moment before flicking his cigarette away and calling out,
Oh, Mr. Jenkins?
With an air of annoyance, Jenkins stopped and turned back.
Yes?
Underwood took a step towards him, moving into a pool of light from an overhead bulb. His sunken face fell into the shadow of his brow, yet his eyes shone, reflecting light from some unseen source.
Come here.
His tone was casual but firm. Jenkins swayed slightly with the gentle motion of the ship, his eyes held by Underwood's. Then he walked slowly back to where he was hidden. Bidden.
What, better without these?
No, better with. Excuse me. When he stood face to face with Underwood, he stopped.
What is your business? Asked Underwood.
I'm a detective, said Jenkins. Jenkins' tone was flat, devoid of emotion.
A police detective?
No, I'm self-employed.
Who hired you?
Mr. and Mrs. Haverley of Knightsbridge, London.
Why?
Their daughter was murdered in Oran by an Englishman, believed to be a gentleman, or perhaps a confidence trickster, posing as a member of the aristocracy.
And you believe me to be this man?
Yes.
Do you have any evidence to support your belief?
Some people have described you, named you as being a likely suspect,
but nothing more concrete.
No, not relating to Miss Haverley. But I have since linked you to other murders in Algeria and Tunisia.
Have you now?
Yes.
And you suspect me of being what? A homicidal maniac, is that it?
Yes.
And have you shared your suspicions with anyone else?
No.
I'm waiting to catch you in the act.
Are you indeed?
And then what? You'll come to the rescue, I suppose.
Yes, I'll arrest you.
Underwood smiled. Really? Are you armed? You'd better be.
I have a pistol.
Show me. Jenkins opened his raincoat and revealed a revolver in a shoulder holster.
Well, you are quite the man of action, aren't you, Jenkins?
Yes, I was commando in the war.
It was a rhetorical question, Jenkins. I don't want to hear your life story. Tell me, and this is a real question, which is your cabin?
Cabin 14.
Sharing?
No.
Very good. Well, why don't you take me there and offer me a little something to drink before dinner?
I don't have anything to offer you.
I don't drink alcohol. Really, Jenkins? Said Underwood, taking the detective lightly by the arm.
Who said anything about alcohol?
So that's the beginning of that story. I'll finish that later on. Then I'll finish that story for you. This is the good bit. I see the youngsters have gone. It's probably good. It gets a bit nasty. So, if you'll remember, Lord Underwood has taken the private detective back to the private detective's cabin. Underwood opened Jenkins' cabin door and flicked on the light. He looked around, then beckoned Jenkins to follow him inside. Once the detective was in, Underwood closed the door and locked it. It was a small room with two bunk beds fixed to the wall. The top one was undisturbed, but the one beneath it had been slept in. There was also a chair and a table. On the table was a briefcase, an ashtray, and various papers. A single porthole looked out over the sea. To the right was a door. Underwood opened it and found a tiny shower room with a wash basin, a toilet, and a shower stall. He turned back to Jenkins. Take off your hat, coat, and shoulder holster and gun, and put them on the bed there. Jenkins did as he was instructed. Now, roll up your sleeves. Jenkins obeyed. Underwood turned on the light in the shower room. He motioned for Jenkins to enter. In here, please. Jenkins stepped past Underwood into the room. There was only enough space for one person to stand at a time. Get into the shower stall. Jenkins did as he was told. Underwood inspected the items around the wash basin. He saw what he was looking for. The safety razor was slippery with soap scum, and Underwood grimaced. Oh dear, you really ought to rinse this out more thoroughly, Jenkins. You know you could get an infection if you cut yourself with this. He turned on the hot tap and rinsed the razor under the slow gurgle of water, washing away the soap and beard detritus before carefully unscrewing the head and removing the blade. He held the razor blade up between his finger and thumb. Looks a bit old. Obviously detective work isn't paying too well, eh, Jenkins? Aye, Jenkins began slowly. Underwood cut him off. Oh, it's all right, old chap. Just another of those silly rhetorical questions of mine. He looked to where Jenkins was standing, facing the wall of the shower. Turn around, will you? Jenkins turned around. Now, sit down. The detective sat in the shower tray, his legs protruding out onto the floor and his trousers riding up his ankles to expose gartered black socks. Are you right or left-handed?
Right-handed, said Jenkins.
Okay. Underwood handed him the razor blade. Take this and open the veins across your left wrist. Jenkins took the blade, pressed it against the pale underside of his left wrist, and then, without hesitation, drew it slowly across, slicing down deep into the flesh. Blood erupted around his fingers. Jenkins, his face impassive, continued to draw the blade until it fell away from the wound. Then he looked back to Underwood for further instruction. Underwood reached out and took the bleeding arm. He held it so blood sprayed over the shower walls for a moment, then pushed the hand inwards against the wrist joint to staunch the spurting arteries. He then positioned himself on top of Jenkins' legs, leaned into the stall, and brought the wound to his mouth. He hesitated for a moment to smile at the detective, then, opening his mouth, he eased the man's hand back. Blood gushed into Underwood's mouth. He closed his lips about the wound and let the blood surge around his tongue. He parted his lips and let it spill over them as he savoured its taste. its heat, its richness, before finally closing his eyes and beginning to drink. He was hungrier than he had realised. The cat had done little more than appease the gnawing hunger within, and now, as the blood began to fill his stomach, he felt his strength returning. His dull headache began to disperse, and clarity returned to his thoughts. He held Jenkins' arm a little more tightly around the wrist, lessening the flow for a moment before letting the blood flow again, and then relaxed his grip, giving himself a second rush of blood. Tempting as it was to play with his food until his victim was dead, Underwood knew there was still work to be done. He gasped as he tore the wound from his lips. Blood continued to pour, and he again staunched the flow by pressing the hand in against the wrist. He looked at Jenkins, who was watching him with mild interest. Underwood licked his lips. "Now, Mr. Jenkins, dip your finger into the blood and write, 'Forgive me,' just there on the shower wall." Jenkins, his movements weak and trembling, rubbed his finger in the blood that seeped down his arm and began to write. Underwood waited patiently. When Jenkins had written the M in me, he couldn't wait any longer. He opened the wound and resumed drinking. He watched as Jenkins unsteadily continued to write, determined, it seemed, to complete his message before finally relaxing and letting his hands slide down the wall. Underwood continued to drink until Jenkins' pulse was so weak as to signal the imminence of his death. Then he relinquished his meal and lay the arm down beside the body so that the remaining blood would flow down into the drain. Then, feeling suitably sated, he stood up to examine the scene of the poor detective's apparent suicide. He smiled. If he did say so himself, it was a work of art. With an air of satisfaction, he wiped his chin on the back of his hand. "Well, thank you for dinner, old boy, but now I'm afraid I have to go. The ship docks presently, and I have to be in my coffin and ready for the off." Whistling fragments of a Bing Crosby tune that had recently been haunting him, Underwood went to the basin and washed his hands and face with a small cake of soap. Afterwards, he had to clean the blood from both basin and soap as well. Once the area met with his satisfaction, he dried himself with a hand towel and neatly hung it back on the wall. Then, as he stepped over Jenkins, making sure that he wasn't trailing bloody footprints behind him, he said, "As you so rightly observed, Mr. Jenkins, I'm not on the passenger manifest. But had you checked further, you would have noticed I'm listed among the cargo as deceased." 30 minutes later, Flinch found his master at the bow of the ship, gazing towards the distant horizon. Without turning, Underwood said, "Hello, Flinch. How was dinner?" "Oh, very nice, sir. Steamed steak pudding with peas and slightly lumpy mashed potato. And you?" "A chap called Jenkins. Turns out he was a detective. But yes, very tasty." "A detective, sir? Should I be concerned?" "No. Anything he had on us, I bunged out of his porthole, along with his gun." "What about the body, sir? Do I need to do any cleaning up?" "No. Poor fellow made his own quietus," Underwood smiled. "At least, that's what it looks like."
"Oh, very good, sir."
Flinch joined his master at the rail. Ahead of them, the fog was thinning. A full moon shone like a smudged thumbprint on the sky, its light reflecting on the surface of sea, as if painting a silver path to their destination. Underwood pointed to a distant lighthouse that winked at them from the blackness. "Look, land. It won't be long now. You must be quite excited, eh?" Flinch tried to smile.
I dare say life at Almaceda will be very interesting, my lord."
Underwood looked at him. "Is that all? I thought you'd be thrilled."
"Well, yes, but..."
Flinch looked down at his shoes.
"I just wish you'd reconsider, sir. I mean, it's not as though you'd be in any danger. Not in Spain, of all places."
"Oh, it has nothing to do with danger, Arthur. It's more a matter of..." Underwood sighed. "
Exhaustion.
With that..." "Sorry, still Underwood. What with the last war, that business in New York, the Suez affair, I need a rest, old man. Surely you can understand that. With a tight smile, Flinch nodded.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's a pity we couldn't go to the United States, California, perhaps, but we both know that's quite out of the question. And you say you've no desire to go to England, even if we could.
No, sir. The weather's so bloody grim. I'd love to see a bit of sunshine, you know?
Actually, no, not really. But you're right, yes, you could do with a spot of sun. You look positively ghastly. Flinch chuckled.
Well, it comes with the job, I'm afraid, sir.
Well, you'll soon be able to remedy that, eh?
Yes, sir.
For a few moments they stood in silence, then Underwood said, shame about the ship's cat.
Yes, sir.
Still, never mind, eh? I'm sure they'll find another one.
Oh, yes, sir. No shortage of cats in the world, especially in ports. It's the rats that attract them.
Yes. Wherever there's a plentiful source of prey, there's usually a predator. Underwood took out his watch. It had stopped. He tapped the glass, and the second hand began to move again.
I say, Flinch, do you have the right time?
Flinch looked at his watch.
10 past...
Sorry.
10 past 10, sir. Time for getting ready, perhaps.
Yes. Underwood looked to where the lights of Malaga now glittered on the horizon. Though I think I'll have one last fag before I get back to the coffin. He reached for his case.
Oh, no, sir, said Flinch. Bye, Flash.
He took out his packet of cigarettes and offered them to Underwood. Thank you, Flinch. What would I do without you?
You never need to worry about that, sir, said Flinch, flicking on his lighter. Of that, you could rest assured.
Underwood accepted the light, and both men turned to face the dark, oncoming land on the horizon. The first breaths of a warm wind drifted to them across the sea, and Flinch sniffed.
Do you fancy you could smell oranges on the breeze, sir?
Underwood smiled. Sorry, Flinch, but all I can smell is blood. Flinch chuckled.
Very good, sir. Very droll.
Thank you very much. And so, there we are, listeners. That was Night Crossing, live at Wexworlds 2016, reading from the hardback edition of the book. In fact, that's one thing I mustn't do when I do this again. Don't read from the hardback of Underwood and Flinch. It looks nice, and it's great sort of for presentation purposes, but it gets quite heavy, believe me. So next time, it's paperback or Kindle. Can you read from e-readers at live events? Do people do that? Not very visual, is it? But a lot lighter. My wife took some pictures of the reading, and those are online now at the Facebook listener group, The Sect. They're on my website. They are on Patreon, and they're on Twitter. They went up, kind of live as it happens sort of thing on Twitter. So check them out there if you're on Twitter. You can follow me at The Mike Bennett. You can join the Facebook listener group, or you can, just check it out on Patreon or the website. And talking of Patreon listeners, I have a couple of episodes of Bram Stoker's Dracula there now. So if you're a fan of Dracula, I'm podcasting that at Patreon, and you can just nip over and download it. You don't even have to be a patron. You can just go there, click the link, download it. I will start releasing episodes of Dracula into this public feed eventually, but not just yet. I like to give my patrons the sort of first dibs at them, and now I've made the first two live for everybody, so now everybody can listen, but they have to go to Patreon to get them. And who knows, you might like it when you get there. Stick around, you know what I mean? He said, twisting the ends of his moustache. Okay, so that's it then for this episode of Something for the Weekend. Thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful week. I'm going to try and get back into your ears again next weekend with something different for the weekend. But until then, have a lovely week, and until the next time, farewell. This podcast, like all my podcasts, was brought to you today by my sponsors at Patreon. To join them and get access to Underwood and Flinch Underground, just go to patreon.com and search for me, Mike Bennett. Thank you.